titled the lesson this morning, or this evening, a successful minister. I mean, sometimes you think, Brian, you always preach to us. Maybe you need to give a lesson to yourself once in a while. And so I guess this lesson is directed toward me, and you get to listen in. So read first, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, just the first 12 verses. And then I already noted, I don't know why I didn't see that mistake earlier. But point number one after the parenthesis should be verse 2, not verse 15. So if you have a pencil poised, direct that to verse 15 to verse 2 at the very top where the 1 is with parenthesis. I don't know where I got verse 15 from when I was typing that. All right, so 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and here's the Paul's outline or principles for success, and he pretty much gives himself as an example of what he did as a preacher when he was among the brethren in Thessalonica. So, chapter 2, verse 1. For you yourselves know, brethren, that our coming to you was not in vain. But even after we had suffered, before we were spitefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we were bold in our God to speak to you the gospel of God in much conflict. For our exhortation did not come from error or uncleanness, nor was it in deceit. But as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, even so we speak, not as pleasing men, but God who tests our hearts. For neither at any time did we use flattering words, as you know, nor a cloak for covetousness, God is witness, nor did we seek glory from men, either from you or from others, when we might have made demands as apostles of Christ. But we were gentle among you, verse 7, just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. So affectionately longing for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but our own lives, because you had become dear to us. For you remember, brethren, our labor and toil, for laboring night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you, we preach to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and God also, how devoutly and justly and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe. As you know, how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father does his own children, that you would walk worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Obviously, the text goes on, but we're going to deal with these opening verses in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. So we're going to look at a successful minister or successful ministry and try to find out what that looks like. So this article had this from decades ago, on Found the Perfect Preacher. After 100 years of diligent searching, model preacher has been found. One that will suit everybody anywhere. He preaches exactly 20 minutes and then sits down, having thoroughly discussed a subject of such magnitude that at least 40 minutes should have been given. He condemns sin but never hurts anyone's feelings. He stirs up the church to greater action but never bothers the sleeping indifferent members. He works from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. in every type of work, from preaching to custodial service, always on call the other hours of the night, runs errands for the members, makes $75 a week. So I'll tell you how old this is. Makes $75 a week, wears good clothes all the time, buys good expensive books regularly, has a nice family, well-dressed, drives a good car, entertains the members and the non-members frequently in his home, gives $30 a week to the church. And he also stands ready to contribute to every good cause that comes along. He's 26 years old and has 30 years experience. Mm-hmm. He's tall and short. He's thin and heavy set. And handsome.
I added that.
One side of his head, he has long, wavy black hair. The other side is bald. Remember, this is a perfect preacher. He has a burning desire to work with teenagers and spends all of his time with older folks. Smiles all the time with a straight face. Has a sense of humor that keeps him seriously dedicated to the work. Makes 15 calls a day on church members. Spends all of his time evangelizing the unchurched. Never out of the office. He needs 8 to 10 hours a day to prepare a good lesson. So. Perfect preacher. But if you ask anybody, you know, what is your ideal preacher, you're going to get things like, I want one that's tall. I want one that's short. I want one thin, one heavy set. I want wavy black hair. I want a bald one. I want one that works with teenagers but gives his time to old folks. All those things that mention that thing. You ask anybody, what's your ideal preacher? You're going to get things like that. So here's how Paul looks in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. In the introduction, I didn't put that in your notes, but he is an example of his work in Thessalonica, and he was successful. Chapter 1, verse 9. You turn from God to idols. You turn to God from idols to serve the living and true God. Successful. Chapter 2, verse 1. You know, brethren, our coming to you was not in vain. Means he was productive, he was fruitful, accomplishing his purpose. He was effective when he preached in Thessalonica. So in this text, Paul gives some principles for success, and I just listed 4 major areas. And look at how, for a successful minister, notice how that minister would handle the gospel. Number 2, how he would handle people, how he would handle himself, then how he sees the goal of his ministry. So number 1, and I broke that down under several areas in the text. So how does Paul handle the gospel? And in the text, this is what he did. In verse 2, he says, we were bold to speak to you the gospel. You're bold in preaching. You have courage in God. You're confident in what you're going to say. You're daring, spirited. And Paul even said that to the brethren in Ephesus. He said, pray for me, that utterance may be given to me, that I may open my mouth boldly. So when Paul says, gives these principles for a successful minister, he says, preach boldly. Be bold. Number 2 in the parenthesis, he mentions verse 4. They've been entrusted with the gospel, even so we speak. And that's what the minister has happened in his work. He's been entrusted with the gospel. By definition, something valuable being placed in the hands of another person for proper use. If you've been entrusted with something, you've been given responsibility. If somebody entrusts you with something, you have the a fiduciary responsibility. Fidelity means you're handling that which belongs to another, and you need to exercise stewardship. So we've been, as a minister, we've been entrusted with the gospel. So handle it carefully. In verses 3 through 6, there's a series of nots. You notice when I was reading the text, the word neither or not. First of all, he said we're preaching not from error or guile. In other words, our exhortation was not from subtle or underhanded means. Paul says, I'm preaching, but not in a cunning manner. I'm not using trickery when I preach. Second, he says it's not from uncleanness. There was gross immorality and impurity often associated with the pagan or heathen worship. And that was abundant at Corinth and abundant in Thessalonica. Heathen worship. And so Paul says, our gospel does not include and did not come from that kind of activity that you started in your life. Paul said, our preaching is not from deceit. Our motives are pure. We don't want to mislead you in our preaching. We're not trying to be crafty. We're not dishonest. We're not causing you to believe something untrue. In other words, we're not lying. We're not vague in our exhortation. We're bold with that which has been entrusted to us. Verse 4, he continues that list, not pleasing men. to the thing, to those, the things that people want to hear. I'm not just going to preach to you things that are the popular mindset. Isaiah verse 30. Here's the Old Testament prophet Isaiah, to listen to his congregation. He was said, this is a rebellious people. Children who will not hear the law of the Lord. Who say to the seers, do not see. They say to the prophets, speak to us smooth things. Prophesy deceit. Can you imagine preaching to a congregation that says, don't tell us the truth? Preach to a congregation that said, we don't want to hear the law? And then so Isaiah said, the people are saying, get out of the way, Isaiah. Turn aside from the path. Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. In other words, we don't want God in our presence. In a religious assembly, we don't want God. We want to do it our own way. So Paul said, we didn't come in like that. You have to preach what pleases you. Verse 5, we didn't use flattering words. We weren't covetous. We didn't come in wearing a cloak. We weren't covering up anything just to get gain. No pretense. We didn't give you false praise just to get more gain. You know, the prophet. We didn't, in verse 6, we didn't seek glory from men. In other words, we're not in it for praise. We're not preaching so we get an attaboy. Or a plaque on the wall for service. We're not in it for financial gain, get rich scheme. No, we didn't seek, we're not preaching for the glory of men. Number 4, he mentions in verse 6, still in the parenthesis, says, when we might have made demands as apostles of Christ. Now that phrase, Paul is saying, you know, we could have asked you for financial support. That's what that phrase means. Well, we could have done that. Verse 9, he along this same theme, he says, but you remember, brethren, our labor and toil, laboring night and day, that we might not burden you? So Paul did receive partial financial support from his ministry being a tent maker. In Acts chapter 18, beginning of verse 1, I'll read it for you. Paul came to Corinth, found Aquila and Priscilla. And so, because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked. He worked. Aside from preaching and being the missionary. And then, for by occupation, they were tent makers. So Paul did receive some financial support as he went on his journey as a laborer, a worker. Paul also received financial support from other churches. In Philippians 4, verse 15, Paul writes to them and says, now you Philippians, you know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. For even in Thessalonica, that's where we're here tonight, you sent aid once and again for my necessities. So Paul, while he's in this congregation in Thessalonica, he said, you know, I could have asked you for financial help, necessity. But then he's received support from being a tent maker, and he received support from another congregation along the way. So I put in your notes, many congregations cannot afford to provide full financial support for a preacher. Now they can't treat the preacher as a large corporation or company without any society. So, so when I came here, I didn't quit my day job. I didn't quit my sales job and then went back to school and got to get a teaching credential because I didn't want to be a salesman the rest of my life on the pavement. So I went back to school so I could at the same time support myself and receiving support from here. Remember when we supported Max and Haley Turner? A letter from them just recently, February 2017. Max and Haley finished their preaching school. You know, he did. So he said, I've accepted a full-time preaching position at the Highland Church of Christ in Southern California. Highland, California is about 5 or 8 miles north of Redlands, just before you go up the mountain on that while they're up to Big Bear. So he says, we'll be making our trek to Highland sometime in mid-June of this year. Says, between the pay that the Highland Church of Christ has offered me and what Haley will be making when she gets a job in California, we should no longer need to live on support from month to month. And he puts ideally. But yet he's moving with the intention, you know, that congregation will not be able to support him fully. But he's counting on, you know, Haley, his wife, getting a job to provide for that support. I want to say, Zach, let me pull you aside here for a moment. And, you know, there are some other things that you can do, you know, to raise my hand, you know, what I did, you know, you can do too. When we got this, these letters, this is from our Latin American missions, Jack Barber, and there's several of these out back. But they had the graduation for the preaching school down in Latin America. And one of the elders from Forest Park Church of Christ went down and attended that. And he mentioned some things in there. He appreciates the attitude of gratitude on these dozen students. And he says, second, you know, these men and their families expressed commitment to the Lord. And then he said, in one paragraph here, each graduate has a plan to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, even though many do not yet have financial support. They are committed to working a secular job while preaching. They understand the perseverance required with a no-quit attitude. And he mentions he appreciates the excitement that these students have in facing the challenges ahead in preaching the gospel. So like Paul, like me, like Max and Haley, like these students here, you know, preachers sometimes are at a place where they cannot receive full financial support. Paul said, you know, I could have made a demand on you, but he didn't. You know, I think, you know, when I see want ads for preachers in the Christian Chronicle, sometimes at the end they'll say, you know, preacher wanted, but they'll also say, advertise, he needs to have some kind of financial support included because it's such a small congregation and they cannot help him out. So he has to have a job on the side or another job. So point number four, the verse 6, Paul says, you know, we could have made demands on you. So we see, number one, how one handles the gospel in these areas. You know, we need to be bold. We're entrusted. We don't want to do it for these things. You know, there's a way to preach. But second, when a successful minister, how does he handle the people? Three things are mentioned in the text. Verse 7, gentle among you, gentle, how he handled the people. And then he gives the illustration. As a nursing mother cherishes her own children. Well, you are familiar with that illustration. How a nursing mother would handle children. Gentleness, patient, in contrast to contentious, kind. One definition, dictionary definition of gentle was sweet reasonableness. Sweet reasonableness. Gentle, in the dictionary definition, is goodness of heart, tender. Ephesians 4, verse 15 says, speaking the truth in love. So we think, Paul, how did you handle the people in Thessalonica when you preached there? Oh, I was gentle, as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. Verse 11 gives a second illustration. Paul, how were you among the brethren in Thessalonica? Well, I was as a father with his own children. So as a nursing mother who cherishes children, as a father. In other words, the firmness of a dad. He gives some illustrations in verse 11. As a father, you know how we exhorted? If you exhort someone, you admonish them. You urge them to pursue a course of conduct. You know, if you admonish, you advise. If you're admonishing, you're encouraging, and you're warning of the dangers if you pursue a particular course of action. So Paul says, you know, now I was among them not only as a nursing mother, but I was as a father too. Not one or the other, I was there as both. I comforted, in other words, he relieved distress in the lives of the members. He charged them in verse 11. That means to be firm without creating fear. The commandment. He charged them. So when you think, what does a successful minister and ministry look like? Well, not only the way that the one who stands before you handles the gospel, but how does he handle people? As a nursing mother who cherishes and is gentle? As a father? You know, firm? Firmness of a dad? Father, as a father does his own children? Verse 8, he mentions, I was among you affectionately. I was pleased to impart to you the gospel. So how was I among you? I was glad to stand and deliver that gospel message. And then he adds our own lives. So that fits in with the nursing mother and a father. So as Paul did, the preacher needs to fit himself into the lives of the people and not hide himself. We're members one of another. So we weep. We weep together with those who weep, and we rejoice with those who rejoice. So we were pleased not only to impart the gospel, but to impart our lives, involve ourselves. Then the last one, how he handles his own self. Verse 10, we behaved ourselves. So there you go. I know I get admonished like that all the time from you. Sometimes, many times, I'm going words before I get to God. Behave yourself. I don't hear him say that to anybody else, but to me. Behave yourself. But Paul mentioned some ways that he behaved himself in verse 10. Said we were devout. In other words, he showed devotion to God and to the preaching of the gospel. So the spiritual side of his ministry. He was just. He rightly fulfilled his duties. He did that which was right, according to that which is right. Blameless. He lived so that there was no provable charges for misdeeds. He was above reproach. He was a proper example. So you think, what does a successful minister look like? How he handles himself? Leading himself. Then the last one, number 4, how one sees the goal of his ministry. What is my purpose when I stand before you and deliver a message? At least in this part of our worship. Verse 12. So that you would walk worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. One design, intent, purpose of a message, delivering a message in our worship assembly, is to move the audience to a particular course of action. In this text, in verse 12, and there's many purposes in preaching, but in this text, it's designed to move the brethren to walk worthy of God who has called them into his kingdom and glory. And I just put 3 John verse 4 also, where John said, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. And that's the greatest joy, I think, at least one great joy that a preacher can receive, is when he sees the audience, the listeners, those who have received the word, you know, act accordingly. That's a great joy. So when Paul writes to the churches, you know, so many times he includes a commendation for their. It's interesting that he doesn't write about the number in attendance. Concerned about how those who are in attendance walk. And that's our lesson. So what does a successful minister look like? We look at him in 3-4 areas. How he handles the gospel. How he handles people. How he handles himself, and how he sees the goal of his ministry. That's the lesson. That's for me. Always when we assemble in the evening, we at the close of the lesson, we not only sing, we sing that song of encouragement, song of invitation. We extend that invitation to one or more that may not be a member of the New Testament church, not a Christian. So we give those that simple plan, that formula, if you will, those steps you need to hear. You know, hear the good news, the biblical message. Second, believe it. Number 3, have it change your life, repentance. Number 4, you need to make a confession of your faith to witnesses, whether it's a few or many, and then be baptized for remission of sins. Rise and walk in newness of life. From that point on, begin to grow in grace and knowledge. And so that's the formula. That's the invitation we always extend at the close of a lesson. So let's stand together and sing the song that Dennis has selected for us.